Welcome to the Product Podcast by Product School. Here's a preview of today's talk.
So let's look at strategy and customer pain points. So I've always said, you know, and Steve Jobs basically says you have to start with the customer experience and work backwards toward the technology. So a lot of times we see products where it's a technology solution. Facial recognition, great. But where do you apply it? And what is the pain point that you're trying to solve? Same with Bezos. What he says is we're not competitor obsessed, we are customer obsessed. So we start with the customer and we work backwards. So the theme there is always starting or identifying the pain point will help you become a good product manager, without a doubt. So if you know a key pain point that you can solve, and if the pain point is big enough, that will make the company or have an impact on the company metrics, that will definitely you will have a great impact as a product manager.
In this podcast, we teach our listeners valuable lessons about product management and transform them into thinking like a product manager. We teach product management, coding, data analytics, and blockchain in 14 campuses worldwide, including San Francisco, New York, and Seattle. You can find more information at productschool.com. Join our Slack community of 25,000 professionals.
Thanks
to
everyone for coming.
And stay
firstly,
tuned
thank you
for our
to
upcoming
Product
events.
For inviting me to present. And we'll make this sort of an interactive session, so you know, hopefully all of you guys can participate in as well. So today's topic is sort of moving from UX, whether you're doing design, user research, you know, many different disciplines. So we'll talk about that into product management. And you know, before we start, let's do a quick poll so that you know I get a sense for what your roles are. So how many of you are currently in like UX roles or doing like roughly UX design? Yeah, okay. And how many are you guys in product already or doing product or other roles within?
I'll just say I'm multidisciplinary.
Is that program manager? Okay. So, you know, good thing about this is the learnings here can be applied to any role when you're transitioning to product. I assume that all of you guys are definitely interested in sort of being product managers. And so that's what we'll talk about. And before I introduce myself, you know, I just wanted to sort of get a little bit of a sense for who you what your roles are. So just quickly a little bit about myself. So I've been in the industry for 15 plus years. And, you know, initially I was at large companies like eBay, PayPal, and Intel. And more recently, I've sort of at various startups. And I'll talk about my journey a little bit as well as to, you know, why I decided to move from like large companies to startups and, you know, like Quixie and Movado, as well as now I'm at UserZoom. So I'll be able to talk about UserZoom a little bit. So that gives you some context into how, you know, I've transitioned and what learnings I have. Throughout my career at PayPal, eBay, you know, initially I started with design and user research and sort of conducting research worldwide as well as building or designing products for end users. But then I'll talk about my transition as well. So worked on over 20 B2C plus B2B2C products throughout my career. So as you can see, this is not an enterprise focus because I was focusing on the end users and customers. Global focus, I've traveled extensively and built products worldwide. And then primarily platform web, mobile, and analytics products. And then, as I said, my focus has been consumer products and obviously driving a lot of business metrics, which I'll show you an example of. So the quick agenda today is talk about my UX career a little bit so that you know maybe you can resonate. Some of you guys who are in UX can resonate with that. And how I transitioned to product, what motivated me to be a product manager. And then you know I asked some other folks, like, what would you like to learn if you were transitioning? And a lot of folks that said they would like to see product management in action, like a case study, like an example of what it takes to be a product manager and how do you go about doing that. And then some lessons. So I would definitely like to do that. And for the lessons portion, I definitely you know would love to hear what your guys' experience has been in terms of sort of knowing more about product management and applying it. So just a quick point about UserZoom. So we are an enterprise UX analytics company, and it is you know, all of Fortune 500. Most of those are our customers. Essentially, we allow a platform for conducting UX testing. How many of you are familiar with usability testing, whether it is in lab or you know, in person? So UX testing, as you know, is basically getting feedback on whether your product, your designs, mobile app. So we allow a platform to do this remotely. So you can create this and launch it, and then it's like a survey, but we record the audio camera and the screen as the participant is going through it and provide the metrics and the video and all the insights related to that. So you will see why this is important, because the case study I'm going to talk about is related to user Zoom. So when I was in school, I was doing industrial engineering, but my focus was on HCI. So at that time, I didn't know what HCI was. But the first course I took, the first book was Design of Everyday Things. So how many of you guys have read this book or heard about it? Great. So I highly recommend this book if you haven't read it. And I try to read it every once in like a year or 2 years, just to remind myself what Design of Everyday Things is. So this was the start of my UX career. And at that time, you know, a lot of these UX companies, whether it was Apple, Google, Netflix, they were focusing very much on UX. And they were focusing on consumer products. So previous to this, you know, there's the Oracle, IBM's, and Cisco's, which are great companies, obviously. But these companies were focusing on the end consumer. And that was the start of that revolution where UX became really important. The interfaces looked like this. Obviously, all of us can relate to examples of many such products, which are extremely overwhelming to use. And so I thought this would be a really awesome career for me. So the user focus and building products from an end user standpoint was a tipping point, you know, around that time. So, you know, my early career at eBay and PayPal, you know, I was designing a lot of checkout products, building a lot of products that are more consumer focused. At PayPal, I worked on sort of several of our financial products, PayPal credit, PayPal debit, as well as at eBay in terms of eBay seller tools, being able to allow sellers to sell items in bulk. So it was more buyers as well as seller experience. As you know, it's a marketplace. There was definitely this design, iterative design approach, where you start from a very, very basic design all the way to a high fidelity. And so all of us have experienced that in some way, shape, or form, where you go through an iterative process of coming up with products. At Quixia as well, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on design. And as you can see, design was definitely something that I enjoyed and I loved doing. And so I had definitely a lot of passion being a specialist. But then what made me transition to product is something that we will talk about. At PayPal, I was managing a lot of different disciplines, which, as you probably know, that there are several disciplines within design, which would include UX strategy, visual design, interaction design, there's content, user research, and prototyping. So sort of managing many of these aspects. But then sort of my transition to product. And you know, the story there was, you know, doing great at UX and enjoying that. But then obviously doing something different, you know, there's a little bit of, hey, is that for me? Is that something that I will enjoy? So I found myself being involved in many different aspects of the product beyond UX. So sort of understanding how our pricing worked, attending sort of Scrum team meetings, and looking at dashboards and metrics and trying to understand like how PayPal was doing in terms of metrics. You know, looking at roadmap and how I can influence the roadmap, or looking at pros and cons of different aspects of building products, presenting at webinars or internal webinars in order to sort of promote PayPal products. And then obviously a lot of agile and attending those Scrum teams and you know, even hosting Buckfest. So basically I found myself that along with my UX role, I was also doing a lot of other things, which I found really interesting, and I was enjoying that. So as you, I'm sure you've seen this Venn diagram where there's product management is an intersection of UX, tech, and business. What I found was I was also attracted to these other areas where, you know, sort of knowing more about our business and how we can influence that, or what is the underlying technology and how to make a great UX happen, was something that I was interested in. And so if you are sort of feeling that as well, where you feel like, you know, you want to know more about pricing and how metrics will impact based on pricing, or you want to know more about the underlying technology, or you want to know more about design, whatever it is, whatever discipline you are part of, if you feel that attraction toward other areas, so in order to do a more holistic end-to-end product management might be for you. So I enjoyed this aspect of, hey, there is an island out there. We should get on that island, and motivating a team to get there, because you know, the island has lots of gold, maybe. So being able to have that vision and that long-term view of what a product could be was something that I was passionate about. So that motivated me to sort of look into a product role at PayPal. And I had at least one friend in each of these teams, whether it was engineering, finance, legal, you know, and I was interacting with them while I was transitioning. So it made my transition slightly easier because they're like, you know, we know you, we know Paresh, you've done, you're expert here, you know all the other aspects. So my transition became slightly easier because I knew sort of, I had a lot of cross-functional team members that I interacted with on a regular basis. So this is an example that I would like to share, like a case study of how I have applied product management. And, you know, I've done that throughout at PayPal at the startups that I was at, but I picked this example at UserZoom because I think it will be a fun example to share. And, you know, we don't have to spend a lot of time explaining the background. It's probably easy to pick up that example. So the project was called moderated usability testing. So usability testing, as you know, in the lab where there is a moderator, or it could be a researcher, designer, product manager, interacting with an end user in order to build or ask questions about the interface and give them some tasks and see how they perform. So this project was called moderated usability testing. So in order to understand this, UserZoom is an unmoderated testing tool up until this point. So we were essentially unmoderated in the sense you can create this entire study or a survey and send it to a participant and or thousands of participants, and they take it one by one and you see the metrics. But there is no real-time interaction with the user. So essentially, if you can think about a product manager or a designer and an end user, essentially they are not interacting per se with each other. They are basically interacting through a video that is being recorded, and the designer gets to see that video later on. So clearly, there was one thing that was missing is our customers were saying moderated testing, being able to talk to the customer and their end user, was a big part of their focus. That's something that they want to do. So being able to have that interaction, but remotely, was a big part of their focus. So today, they were using many, many different tools for the remote conferencing. So I'm sure all of you have heard about these conferencing tools like, you know, WebEx and Skype, and you know, they were using email. They were using all kinds of tools to interact with their users. But there was not a reliable way for them to interact through a conferencing solution. And all of these tools essentially were so disjointed that it created a very clunky experience. There were also video storage challenges. They were just recording the videos with whatever tool they can and just storing it onto their local machines. But there was no way for them to go back to those videos, share it with others, create clips and insights from those videos. So it was a pretty clunky experience for my end user, and obviously leads to a lot of frustration. The point that I'm trying to make here is, you know, started from an end user problem, right, and work our way up to the solution. So I'll talk more about that in the lessons shared, but just sort of continuing that example here, the other aspect of this was, what was our vision as a company? What do we want to do? And we wanted to be that one-stop shop for all of UX testing, analytics, and insight sharing. And the vision can be completed only if you have both unmoderated and moderated testing together in one platform. So if you look at the unmoderated and moderated, you know, based on the sort of the market data, moderated was still a big part of the pie. And then, you know, it essentially meant lots of dollars for us if we offered both these solutions. If you look at from a metric standpoint, it definitely allow us to increase our average contract value as ACV, as we call it in SaaS, is being able to sell this moderated as a solution, and then also improve our retention. So we can retain more because they get the whole, both aspects of the product within one solution. Now, I would want to highlight that I'm probably not going to spend so much time on the UX process, but there's definitely, once we identified the problem, there was the design team who worked on creating concepts that we created prototypes of and validated with end users, similar to what all of you might have been doing in terms of validating your ideas. So that part I'm not going to emphasize as much as the rest of the process. So this definitely allowed us to hone down on what that solution was going to be. But as you can imagine, one of the key aspects of this was having a conferencing solution in place so that they can have a conferencing solution. But building a conferencing solution is a huge, massive undertaking. That would take us a lot of effort and time. And so I essentially did a build by partner analysis to say, could we build this on our own? Or are there some reliable APIs that are out there that allows us to integrate this? And you know, luckily at that time, Zoom came out with their set of APIs that allow us to integrate a conferencing solution. And then on, from within our platform. And that way, the customers can spawn a session with anybody and then record that video and store it within our platform. This was definitely an MVP approach. This was sort of at the beginning where we can have a conferencing solution and store the video. There are many things that can be done, like, for example, take notes, invite the right participants to join the session. There is definitely a long-term roadmap for it, but we wanted to start out, test a certain solution in the market, see how the customers are responding, so that then we can build upon it. So this is a quick image of what that solution looked like, where here, this is a Zoom conferencing session that is spawned from within our solution, and they are given a specific task, let's say, for example, on Nordstrom.com, and they're asked to perform this task where the participant and moderator or the researcher, designer, are having an interaction on that task, which can be set up within user Zoom, and this whole video gets recorded within the platform so that they can create clips or share that with other stakeholders. So we had an MVP out in the market, and we were able to sort of sell it as an upsell for our customers. So the quote here is from a customer saying, "We're impressed with the strides you've made towards creating a robust tool that supports both moderated and unmoderated." So after that, it was essentially the rinse and repeat. So now that we've gone through this process, what are the next set of features? What is the priority? And how do I go about building the next set of features in order to continue to leverage that? So I just wanted to sort of show a quick example of a case study where, you know, we have the end user problem, the vision, the market, and what sort of metrics that we are able to impact, and then bringing it all together from a technology standpoint, having that build by partner decision, and releasing it, getting some feedback again, and then repeating the whole process. So before I go to the lessons, I just want to take a pause, see if you guys have any questions, and yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
You guys have like a separate account for them, or yeah. Usability
Hub,
where like yeah. Recruit participants.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. So question is, how do you find the participants? Like let's say I'm a customer and I have a product for doctors. Like how do I find that? I find doctors to give feedback. So we also have a panel product. And what that means is while you're creating a study or a project for your prototypes or your website, you can also choose what demographics or participants you're looking for. And we have a way for us to maintain our own panel or create our own panel, so you can find doctors within our panel, or we also partner with other companies where we can find in an automated way. So from a customer standpoint, they can just choose, I want doctors, and here is my prototype, and here are my tasks. And once you launch, we essentially launch it to the doctors, and they start taking the study. Does that answer?
But how do you find the doctors?
Yeah, so there are a couple of ways. That's a good question. So firstly, we have an onboarding process where our marketing teams go out and have an onboarding for essentially the US population or worldwide population, depending on what study we are recruiting for. And then we have them sign up to be panelists. So once they are on our panel, they get compensated for each study that they participate in, so as they give feedback. So essentially, our panel is over 100 million, because now what we've done is we have gotten participants from all over US to be part of our panel. And we also partner with like third parties, depending on what need is. If you're looking for web developers, then we would partner with a certain agency, you know, something like that. Any questions? Okay. So I wanted to use like a quick example that was easy to sort of discuss, and then now we'll talk about some lessons and how what is different for product managers, right? if you're in any other role, what are the five skills that if I were to pick that I have sort of extracted from my experience? And if you were to pick them up, how would you do that? So in my opinion, the five pillars of product, the strategy and the customer pain points. If you're in a UX domain, this is something that comes a lot more naturally, to know what the customer pain point is. But in other roles, it takes a little bit of time and effort to know what the customers are struggling with. Cross-functional leadership, that's extremely important. We are leading team of marketing, design, engineering, reporting to executives maybe, and you're managing a lot of different teams. So we'll talk about that as well. The technical acumen. So from a design standpoint, coming from a UX background, the technical aspects are key. So if you are in a technical background already, this is something that is a great asset that you already have. But being able to have that always helps. Now, you don't have to write code, but what do you need? We'll talk about that. Prioritization, absolutely key. This is something that you will get so many requests to build this, build that. But you have such limited resources. You'll never have more engineers than the number of features that you can work on. So how do you prioritize that? And then metrics. So knowing what metrics you're impacting so that you're not just building features, but you're building value. But do these apply only to UXers? Absolutely not. This applies to everybody. These points I have summarized based on my experience. But they, I would say from a UX standpoint, these would require extra effort. For sure. So let's look at strategy and customer pain points. So I've always said, and Steve Jobs basically says you have to start with the customer experience and work backwards toward the technology. So a lot of times we see products where it's a technology solution. Facial recognition, great. But where do you apply it? And what is the pain point that you're trying to solve? Same with Bezos. What he says is we're not competitor obsessed, we're customer obsessed. So we start with the customer and we work backwards. So the theme there is always starting or identifying the pain point will help you become a good product manager, without a doubt. So if you know a key pain point that you can solve, and if the pain point is big enough, that will make the company or have an impact on the company metrics, that will definitely have, you will have a great impact as a product manager. I mean, look at a few products. iPhone, obviously, Google Home. Wealthfront, Trello, Amazon, they are solving key pain points in their domain. And they make it extremely simple for you to be able to do that. And whether it is investing, iPhone, I don't have to say anything. Google Home, all my timers, alarms, everything is Google Home now. You cannot function without that. Amazon, how easy is it to get a package delivered, maybe the same day, next day, or 2 days later, and pretty much the entire inventory available. So all these products, Trello, has completely revolutionized how your to-do list is done. So they started with a key pain point and they worked towards the technology. The technology solution is amazing, right? In each case, the technology, how they have solved the problem is amazing. But at the same time, I would say being able to have a vision of what or where you can be as a product or as a company, like in case of the moderated example, being able to cover the whole UX testing landscape was the vision, and there was a key missing part. It was big enough. It was a key pain point in terms of the video storage or the conferencing solution, or everybody was using their own conferencing solution rather than a standard one that they know how to work towards. Was going to help us bridge that gap and realize the long-term vision. This will take time. Building and understanding what a long-term vision is. I mean, when you talk about visionaries, there's Steve Jobs, there's Elon Musk. Vision is hard to, come across, people who have that, but that will come over time as you do this more and more. I like this example of product canvas that helps you sort of think big outside of, what your day-to-day is. Like, who are the segments that you're addressing? What are their problems? What is your unique value of the solution? How can you build it? Who are your stakeholders? Essentially, what is the entire end-to-end view of your product. So you're not focused on only one aspect. Because all of us come from specialist roles, but now we are doing a generalist role as a product manager. You have to think of all aspects. Is there a legal issue? How are you collecting data? Where are you storing data? There are so many aspects that this sort of a template will help you think of so that you're not missing any points. This takes time and practice, but eventually you will start thinking more holistically. The UX part, as I said earlier, that is always there. Once you know what the problem is, being able to iteratively test a solution that works for everybody, that process is integral. That's a key value that UXers have that I think, you know, everybody should continue to nurture, where you come up with concepts, show it to users, bring the feedback, iterate, do this many times until you see this is the right solution. Any questions as I go through this? I'm going pretty fast here. Go ahead.
What do you think of the shift, which is grounded in reality, right? Reality being the technical experience that you have, you as the company has, but the milestone then that I can venture into.
Yeah.
How do you still frame of vision, which is long term?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, so the question is, how do you frame a long-term vision, right, when you have this technical maybe challenges in terms of your architecture or other constraints that you might have? The way I think of it is, it's always good to have an end vision or where you want to be, but you work backwards, you know, from there. So, for example, in case of our solution, the moderated solution, the technology constraint, the first one that we had was we could not have invested in our own conferencing solution. That was not something that we wanted. So we start from there where we want an ability to interact with the user real time and record and then have multiple phases in order for us to be able to get there. So my, I guess, recommendation would be, yes, once it's always good to always have that end goal or end vision in mind, and then work with the cross-functional team to see how we can get there. It might be multiple phases. It might require a re-architecture of your backend. It might require a complete redesign of your front-end. It might require you overcoming some technical or legal hurdle, some compliance hurdles that you might have as to how you're collecting data. If you have that goal and if you create your roadmap in order to get there over time, that will help you. But if you start, you know, short-term and only solve one problem without a vision, you know, the product might not get there. Does that answer your question? Yeah. So that constraint is always going to be there in large companies, especially, is that you have so many constraints, and how do you create a roadmap that addresses that hurdle one by one? As long as you know what that end vision is and that end metric is, you might not get the results quickly in the short term, but as long as you keep working towards that end goal, you'll eventually get there. So the technical acumen, so as I said, from a UX background, this was really key. But you know, at the same time, Agile has definitely simplified and helped how iterations happen, how development happens, and what the PM role is. I would say being able to still think about the customer and the problems and the end goal is the key. But if you're able to also sort of manage or do the product owner role, where you're able to prioritize and have your sprint planning, demos, stand-ups, all of that. My view here is there is limited time. Sometimes you have multiple Scrum teams that you're managing. If you set the vision right, you know, the team is going to be driving towards that in a much better way. It's like, you know, the team is rowing hard towards the island that you want to go to. Do you want to row fast with them and get them there faster, or make sure that you're going in the right direction? Because the team might be rowing fast, you are rowing with them, but you might land on a completely different island where you don't want to go, or you might not find an island at all. So I would say this has definitely simplified that process. You can break features and functionality into small chunks and deliver value, but do not lose sight of the long term that you want to do. There could be lots of technology, whether it is back end, front end, and all sorts of technical terms that get thrown at you when you transition, right? It is good to know a lot of these and also sort of get a good handle. If you're transitioning from a technical role, this might come easier because then you know that a lot of how code is merged, right? How automated testing works, or how do you do sprint planning in the most efficient way? But from a design background, a lot of this could be new as well. But the key aspect, other than knowing the technology aspects, is, in my opinion, also understanding what makes a good product. And there could be many, many different things that are outside of your day-to-day, which includes like you know, scalability, performance, legal compliance, how good your product is in terms of maintainability or your code is, reliability of your systems and how what the uptime is, any bugs, and most importantly, tech debt. So you know what sort of architectural constraints that your product has today, which is something what you asked. So that once you know that, you know what it will take for you to get to that vision that you're looking for. Do you need to work on a re-architecture project and get to what you want? But if you do not have that vision, you know, the re-architecture project may not give you what you're looking for, so that you can feed your requirements into that as well. So, the products that we saw, like Google Home, you know, I'm sure they had a pretty nice backend to be able to realize that vision that we see. So being able to have that holistic view, and then this is something that I think is most important, where day to day my engineers come to me and say, okay, this problem, we have these three solutions. Which one should we build? And this is going to be a case that happens all the time, where you have to list the pros and cons of each one. What is the development effort? What are the constraints? What else are we dependent on? What other teams we are dependent on? How much time it's going to take, and what is the cost, the resources? So if you're able to do that pros and cons on a day-to-day basis, you'll be able to pick the right solutions. Now, obviously, in product role, I feel that the problem definition is a product manager space. The solution is still, it comes from the cross-functional team. Maybe marketing has some ideas on how to market the product, or engineering has ideas on how to build it, or design has some ideas on how to create an awesome experience. But being able to have that discussion with the cross-functional team and choose what is best for your product is absolutely key, and it takes time. But this pros and cons analysis will get you there. And you learn respect of the other cross-functional teams, because they trust in you to help them come up with a solution. Now, these decisions are taken along with the team. This is not exactly sort of, you know, you making the decision, but you are making decisions pretty much every day. You have to choose. A lot of times the team will just come to you and say, okay, we need a solution. So prioritization. This is another one which is every single day you'll have to do it, where there is always this balance between what do you want to build, what is the vision, the scope, what's the cost, how many engineering resources, and when can you go to market? So there is always this tension. Yeah, you can build a lot, but you won't have those resources, or it might take you forever to get there. You might be able to build something quickly, but what if it is not something that is being used? Right? Even if you invested a small amount of resources, those resources are still not used correctly. So this is a decision that you will have to make every single day. So, you know, another Steve Jobs quote, as you can see, I definitely like Steve Jobs. Focusing is about saying no. So every single day you'll have all these requests come in. Hey, can you build this? Can you build that? But the trick is to show the vision. Again, show the island and say, you're taking us on the wrong island. We want to get to this island because this is the right island to be on. So there are many frameworks out there in terms of prioritization. I would say have your own framework in your back pocket. This is one I like, where sort of an impact versus effort, simply put. Where you, for every initiative, you know what that impact is. And I'll talk about metrics a little bit more later. But sort of defining what that metric is that you want to impact and what is the effort involved in a simplistic way. There is lots that goes in prioritization, like the architectural constraints, the team size, the resources that you have, the skills that you have. But in general, having a framework that works for you and having that ready and getting used to prioritizing daily will help, because there will be a prioritization discussion at least a few times every single day. So sort of what I said earlier, you know, there could be different themes that you're prioritizing. There could be platform work. There could be front-end work. There could be tech debt. There could be performance, scalability, or legal. There could be many, many different things that you are prioritizing across. And so having a more holistic understanding of that definitely helps. Any questions? As I'm powering through some of the slides here.
So just going back to technical acumen.
Yeah.
So one of the aspects is that there's always a lot of new technology coming into the market.
Correct.
And especially when you come from a UX background,
yeah,
how do you keep in touch with what technology needs to be Because finally, you're relying on your engineering team to tell you what they do.
Exactly.
But, like, I guess, like, how do you decide?
Correct. So the question is, how do you keep up with the changing technology? So one thing I'll say is that these principles, like prioritization, customer focus, all of that, they are regardless of technology. If you look at like last 20, 25, 30 years, the products that have been successful are obviously focused on the end user. The technology has changed. Maybe it was desktop software first, then web, then mobile, and now, you know, AI and all that. But the end user problem hasn't changed. But how do you keep up with that? It's always important to keep up with that. Obviously, interaction with your engineering teams on a regular basis to know what is changing. If they're using buzzwords like big data and AI and all of that, it's good to sort of know more about that. You know, I also like to sort of every once in a while look at Udemy or Udacity, you know, those kind of things where you're always knowing what is the next new thing. Although you might not use that technology right away, you might get some ideas. So like, for example, AI is hot right now. And so one of the things that we always look at is how can it help solve a problem? Let's say, for example, in our case, you need a certain number of study completes, to say this study is successful or this task is successful. What if you're able to predict at what time? You don't need to collect more completes. You can say this is successful or it is not going to be successful anymore, even if you collect more sample. So I would say knowing what the technology can help you, what sort of problem it helps you solve, will help you suggest that to your engineering teams to say, hey, we should look into this. This is a new technology trend that is happening. Or mobile, like for example, you know, what are the latest in iOS or Android, right, in the new releases. So sort of having a viewpoint in technology and constantly learning is absolutely critical. So because that changes, and based on that, you might have a different way of solving problems. Like chatbots were hot, now assistants are hot. So it depending on how the technology is changing, you might have a different solution to the problem.
If you have enjoyed the episode so far, check out our upcoming live events at productschool.com/events. Use the promo code PRODUCTPODCAST in all caps to get a free ticket to the next event in your city.
So the metrics, this is sort of the fourth point, which is really important, I think. So this is just a quote that I like from Deming, is like, in God we trust, you know, everybody else or all others bring data. So I think that's another big change that I noticed when I moved from UX to product, was everything has to be data driven, because there are going to be so many opinions. Everybody's going to say we should build this, we should build that. But what is the data? And so sort of be prepared to crunch a lot of data, know a lot of data by your fingertips. What are the metrics? How many users do we have today? What is their engagement? How many sessions do they have? You know, all of those metrics will help you sort of have those arguments with the stakeholders to say, no, we should build this because my data points to something else. There's going to be lots of dashboards. So I took this, off of Google. So this is not my current product. But basically, every morning when I wake up, I try to look at a dashboard to see how is the product doing. Has anything changed? This takes time and effort, but this is really, really key, because then you will be able to spot trends. If a certain number is going downwards, then you have to investigate why, and are there features that you need to build in order to help plug that. So one thing is, how do you gain this specific skill? This is hard, because in different roles, we're not always focused on the end metric, right? We are sort of working on with our own team and, you know, trying to make a difference, but we don't know how to measure it. So, you know, the trick I use is like a single metric that matters. For example, in our case, how many studies are customers doing? How many projects are they doing? If that is going up, I'm not saying that is the only metric, but if there is a single metric that you are striving towards, you know, data analytics is, you know, data scientists, such a hot topic now. And this is what they do. They look at lots of metrics. So if you have access to some data scientist or somebody who crunches a lot of data, you'll be able to sort of look at the data, but it's up to you to derive the insights from it. Just like while talking to customers, you get to know some issues, but based on the data, you might be able to spot issues based on the reports. Being able to share these insights with other teams and say, hey, I think I found this thing where our metrics are going down here because of this issue, and we should do something about it. Or being able to forecast and model. Let's say if we build this, it might give us this incremental enhancement. This is tricky. It takes a lot of effort, and a lot of times it might not be right, where you're trying to forecast something and the adoption is not there. And so you have to figure out why the adoption was not there to what you expected. Do another release and keep iteratively growing it until the adoption is where you want it to be. So definitely this is a skill that is growing a lot, and I think Product School has a course for this as well, but definitely a key skill for product managers as well. So the last thought here, the sort of cross-functional leadership. This is the key for product, in my opinion, and being able to rally a team around what that vision is. Because, you know, everybody likes their own vision. Why would they like your vision as a PM? But if they see a compelling reason, they will go all in to help you with that. So there are many teams you interact with, like development, sales, legal. And the key is everybody's going to try to pull the product in their own direction. You know, sales is going to say, oh, we should build this because it, you know, helps me sell better. Or engineering is going to say, let's build this because this is easy for me to build right now, and I can do this quickly. But from a product manager's role is to sort of stay balanced and do what is right from an overall company and team standpoint, and not just one team, right? So that tension is always going to be there from various teams. And so that cross-functional leadership will come in handy. So I took this from Product Board, which was really interesting. I thought that there are many, many hats of product managers. One day you're a project manager because the timeline is at risk. Or the other day, you know, there is a massive bug that is preventing customers from using your product. So you're looking at what happened. You know, I like this, you know, a butcher, because there could be a lot of features that are not used. Maybe you want to cut some of those features and focus on fewer features and do a great job at it. There's a detective because you're looking at data and you don't know why the numbers are going down. So wearing multiple hats, if you like this, you'll enjoy a product role. But I think in the end, the team and being able to work with a team, and then maybe you're here somewhere like a coach, you know, trying to make great things happen, is really critical. But if that's what you enjoy, is to see the whole team win, then product is the right role for you. So in summary, what I'll say is, see if you can transition within your current org or any adjacency that you have already. That's how I did it at PayPal, where I was able to, within PayPal, I was able to transition. And also the sort of the area that I was working on was similar as well. And then you can start performing some of the PM tasks, like I gave some examples. The network, I think, is really key, even within the company. If you have a friend in each of these cross-functional teams, that will help you understand their role better. And then, most important, make sure product management is for you, because there are good days and not so good days within product, where you know you are constantly challenged on a regular basis, and you're making decisions that not everybody is aligned. You try to get everybody in, and like consensus building is big, but it may or may not happen with every single team. So being able to sort of balance that and manage that feedback and still come back and give that team something else in the future is really, really important. So that's all. That's me. If you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, but I'm, you know, hoping to answer any questions you guys might have.
So one question for me.
Oops, sorry.
Yeah. So transitioning kind of from UX to product management, is there like a portfolio or something? Like, how do you show that you have these skills, I guess?
Yeah. So as I said, you know, if you're doing it within your current organization, and if you're working with, let's say there is a certain team that you like, that you think you're a good fit as a product manager, are you able to work with them in order to do certain tasks? Like, for example, you host a bug fest for them and try to find the top bugs within the product. Or you say, I'll present a certain portion of the webinar because I understand the product really well, and so I'll help present this new feature. Or you know, help with the certain customer problem that you found, and you know, make sure you write like a write-up about why it's a problem worth solving, how big is the problem, and what a potential solution could be. If you're able to take on some tasks that are related to that team, then that team will start seeing the value in you. So I think that's what I was sort of saying, is like I started doing that thing with the team that it was like a credit team within PayPal. And so they saw that, and you know, then it becomes a natural sort of transition. But if you are just currently doing your current role, which is like say design or program management, or you know, that is, it's hard. It's hard to do these things. But how do you slowly start doing those other tasks and gain that skill? Because if you just transition right away, let's say you get the opportunity somehow, and if you transition, it will be pretty hard transition, because then you have to start looking at all these things, and you're responsible for all those things. So how do you start doing some things in parallel so that you get more and more experience doing it is the trick. Is that, I mean, maybe other folks can talk about their experience as well.
Yeah, I'm just thinking for more, since I'm not in an organization right now, I'm usually doing like freelance things here.
Got
and
it.
There. But I've been told by a couple of mentors and other people,
great,
like you're an entrepreneurship kind of like outlook, and you consider product management. It's like, no, because I'm not a big people management person. It's like, no, there's IC roles.
Yeah, so that's a good point. It's like, what if you're not in an organization right now that does product, right? I'll give my example. I wanted to do mobile apps, and this was 2011 sometimes, and I was doing mostly other products and had not done mobile. So I came up with my own idea of a mobile app, and it was a very basic idea where it basically crawled movie reviews for a certain movie from all possible outlets and showed within the mobile app, and then end users could also leave their own review. So I created that app, and I released it, and I was able to use that app as an example of what I have done. So you might have to sort of be creative about things like this, where you show an example of what you've done. Maybe you led a design team, an engineering team to come up with something, right? And you would have to do like a side thing. That will allow you to find the development skill that you need. You have to understand backend, front-end, design. How do you market? How do you track if the app is successful, right? Are there any installs to the app? Is anybody using it? In my case, there's not many users for the app, but you know, I think I didn't spend that much time either. So it was more of an exercise for me to get a handle of on mobile app development. So does that help answer? Yeah. What else? Other questions?
Mm-hmm. Or different pros and cons versus like an engineering team.
Absolutely.
Or a data team.
Yeah.
And I'm sure like there are times where the teams will clash.
Yeah. There was a slide. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you like mitigate that issue as a product?
Yeah. So I would say yes. The way teams prioritize is different. Each team will prioritize differently. You know, a UX designer would look at how pretty it might be, let's say, for example, or they want to prioritize a flow that has been painful for a while. Engineering might say, oh, we really need to invest in our backend right now and get it to a state where we are able to do some new things, maybe. Each team has their own goals, right? But then I think the key aspect there is for PMs to be able to take that, and yes, does prioritization happen with cross-functional team? In some aspects, yes. You know, you have to understand what is the priority that they have in mind, and eventually you have to make a decision on whether it will go on the roadmap or not. Now, it might happen that you're making a decision with maybe the CEO or you know the VP or whoever you're working for, as well as the other PMs, and how the overall roadmap fits together. So it's not like you're sort of making the decision alone, but at some point you are also making the decision by yourself. So I would say the key is to synthesize that information as much as possible. So what is sales asking for? What is engineering asking for? What are customers asking for? So there's a lot of internal stakeholders, but also external. And having that framework, like I was saying, what is that impact versus the effort? And evaluating all this constantly is product management. So it's a skill that you have to sort of learn, and over time you get prioritizing. If somebody says, hey, let's change the logo. So you'll get this request all the time. Let's change the logo, or let's change this design. But what is the impact that we are going to have? So I like this example where somebody said, hey, let's do some facial recognition on our product. But yes, I like the technology. It's amazing. But what is the impact that it is? What is the problem it is solving? And what is the metrics uplift that we'll see if we include that? So I would say having these discussions, you have to be sort of very comfortable doing that. And that's why I was giving that example of the pros and cons. And always look at it from that standpoint. Does that answer your question? Cool. What else? Yeah, go on.
So, I'm sure making the transition within the same company was not very easy.
Correct.
And a lot of things that you would probably try to learn on the job.
Yeah.
Were there any skills that you wish you had picked up from or something like that on the side?
Mm-hmm.
That transition?
Yeah. See, I think product, the key aspect of product is there is at least, I would say, 40 to 50 different skills that you would have to pick, right? Now, nobody can be an expert in 40 or 50 different skills. It's not possible. And the other aspect of product is there will always be an expert in that skill. So let me give an example. Let's say you're doing some metrics, number crunching to see what sort of uplift you're going to get in your metrics. The data scientist is not going to know how to crunch that data, right? The finance guy is going to know what impact it has. Let's say engineering, you're working with engineering. Eventually, they are developing the solution, right? You're not coding. So you're developing, they are developing. So they know the code better than you, right? Or what issues that has. So there is always a learning on various skills that is needed. But if I were to pick, right, like as to what are some skills that would really have, you know, make the transition easier. The customer focus and being able to know what the problem is and how big the problem is at all times. Not just, oh, there is a problem. Why is the problem big enough that it will have an impact on the metric? That is key. But some other, I would say, soft skills is working well with the team to know what their constraints are. And taking that into account and rallying the team, that's something that that is the crux of product management. So knowing that, technical skills, like the question that you asked, how do you always sort of know more and keep learning new things that come in? You know, like I said, chatbots were new, AI is new now, you know, all the sharing economy was new a few years back, mobile apps were, you know, always sort of being in the know of that. And then the metrics piece. So I think all the things that I've said, just knowing that more and more before you actually transition is going to help your transition. So I wouldn't pick one thing or two things, you know, that would help, because product management is vast. It has so many different things that you could learn. And, you know, I'm learning every day, so, you know, something new. So I think the trick is to keep learning, and then, you know, you get better at it by doing it. Yeah, go on.
If you have a background in UX, and you have to kind of manage the engineers, the data scientists, and you have like no idea about coding or data analytics, how do you build like credibility to like hone in and like gather all these teams and say like this is the right way or this is where we should strive for, how do you build that credibility as a UX designer?
Makes sense. Yeah. So how do you build credibility with other teams, right? That you've not done, let's say, coding, or you've not done design, let's say, for example, or you've not done, you know, many other things like finance, right? I have found that there are a few things I'll say. One is, if you know what the customer problem is really clearly, and you know that it is big enough that is going to have an impact, I think a lot of teams value that. That they think, you know, they're contributing to something meaningful here. I would say the number one way to increase or gain that credibility is knowing that piece really, really well. Is doing that piece as to how do I solve this problem for the customer that will have a big lift in metrics. The second is all these skills you have to start gaining little by little, you know, doing pivot charts, Google Analytics or any other metrics tool that you use. You have to sort of dig in, start learning it. Sprint planning. You have to attend sprint planning, see how story points are done, and then you know what the sizing of the thing that you are asking is. It could take 3 months to build what you're asking for when you expected it to be a month, right? So I think the way is to sort of participate in how the product is built. Would that happen on your first product that you know everything about everything, every other domain? It's probably hard. But I would say, one, the customer focus, and then the pros and cons. If you are able to say, let's say marketing comes to you and say, we can do a webinar. You want this tomorrow. We can do a webinar. We can send an email, or you know, we can do a video. Three things. Which one do you want? And here is, we can do it in all three in one day. You're sort of doing a pros and cons as to what the reach is, how, what audience is are you trying to cater to, is it is going to help them, and is it going to make the most noise? Because marketing is all about making noise. So if you're having, if you're able to sort of do the pros and cons quickly with the team and say, I think the webinar is the best idea, and I'll help deliver that, and we'll reach as much audience as possible, then slowly they start sort of trusting you more. The trust would not happen overnight or the first time you do it. You have to gain trust slowly, like any other role. See, that's true for any other role. You have to, you know, claim something, and you have to fulfill it in by maybe delivering metrics in terms of product. The main thing is, did you build something that had an impact and change the business, realize the vision? And then the team starts trusting you more and more. It's very hard. It's very hard because, as I said, there's always an expert in each of these areas, because product is a generalist role, but with a specialist focus, you know, something like that. But I'd love to hear if you guys have more thoughts on gaining credibility. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of to add to that, I mean, credibility comes from kind of doing your job really well.
Yep.
So in our case, we respect those folks from marketing,
yep,
who don't just come to us and ask for a feature.
Correct.
But people who actually say we need this feature because this is the data that they're seeing.
Correct.
Then they can clearly outline why we want to do it, right?
Yep.
So they are kind of building credibility with us in terms
exactly
of how much do we want to respect that.
Yeah.
Right? So I think
that
this case probably just comes down to how well you do your job.
Correct.
And kind of work with others.
Yep. Absolutely, you're right. And you know, they, at the same time, the rest of the team is also building their credibility with you. Right. The engineer is doing a great job on building what you know we wanted it to be. So it's a team effort. So that was my last slide. Right. Like it's eventually it's like a team effort, but all of us are sort of gaining credibility with each other. But with PMs, it's like you have to know and make the decisions on many, many different aspects. And people will come to you on the day-to-day decisions. So just get comfortable in like making decisions for the team, but with their input. You know, so sort of respecting their input is important, because eventually, as I said, they are the specialists and you're deriving from them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the key aspect is the customer data and metrics. So if you're looking at, let's say you released a V1, like the moderated example. We released the phase one of it. We started looking at some customer feedback. They're saying, yes, this product is great, but we would not get it or buy it because of these reasons. So then you start synthesizing the customer data. You also start looking at usage metrics to say, okay, are people using it as much as we want? If not, why are they not using it? And then based on that, you start making a list of potential features, and then that priority that I was talking about. Like you prioritize and say, okay, this is the top feature that is missing right now. And if we did this, it would give us that metric impact, right? So if, and then you have to compare with other products maybe that the company is doing, is this something that is really going to give them, yeah, sure, you have a list, but you know, this is not really that high impact. So constantly analyzing that and constantly feeding that your list. So for your product, you should know what the top five things that the customers are asking for, or the what metrics are showing, or what your engineering teams want to build from a backend platform standpoint. So constantly having that in mind will help you come up with the next thing and the next thing, you know, something like that. So I would say keeping your eyes and ears open at all time. You know, the other thing is to think about like competition. You know, sometimes there is so much competitive pressure, there's market pressure to say, okay, somebody else is doing this, could we do better? And sometimes you might have to just do parity. You know, just, okay, looks like the competition just came up with something that we don't have. Could we just build that? Or technology changes. Like, you know, maybe AI, there is, you know, some new way you can build, you know, your current product and do it differently. So I would say sort of keeping your eyes and ears open for what is new and synthesizing that in reading a lot of information about your industry, your domain, to sort of help you think about the V2 or V3, whatever you're thinking about. Okay?
Like you mentioned, yeah. Product management is very vast. And yeah. Like, are there flavors of it that you switch to specifically for UX? Are there variations of it that are completely UX independent?
Yeah. That's a good question. Like, are there flavors of product management that you could... I mean, see, broadly, there could be three or four different sort of product roles, right? There could be... Like if you're a UXer, I think a consumer-facing product role where it's a consumer product, like a B2C or B2B2C like I did. There could be platform product management. So if you're from an engineering background, if you're looking at, platforms and how to scale platforms and you build platforms, that is another one. In general, there are many flavors. There's an enterprise PM, right? There could be an analytics focus if you're into big data analytics. You know, there could be many different flavors, right? So you'll have to see which one is that interests you and that you feel that you can contribute to or be part of. Choosing that is hard because, you know, there are many flavors, right? So being able to choose that is hard. But for UX, I would say definitely consumer-facing products that have a large sort of front-end aspect is the natural transition.
Because the next step would be that, okay, let's say that you know that that's where you want to go.
Yeah.
And this sort of goes back to this question earlier that, like, you know that you're missing certain skill sets.
Yeah.
How do you know how to build credibility with that, how you get that, so that you can convince somebody to hire you?
Yeah. And so are you talking about, like, a current role, that like, in a current company or, like, a completely different?
Completely.
Yeah. I mean, the app example I gave you, right? Are you able to do something on the side that shows your skill, right? Or are you able to do something within your current role that, yes, your role was, you know, marketing, but you're able to sort of come up with an idea, build a solution around it and solve that problem. Can you build an internal tool that helped your teammates, maybe? If you're able to show that problem, solution, launch, and metrics, that in whatever role you are in, I think that will help you showcase. You can talk about that in your interview or, you know, whoever you're, like a hiring manager, who you're talking to. Like, hey, I have an example of how I have done this and how I prioritized. And, you know, make sure when you do this, document every aspect of it. Who was your user? How big was the market? Were there any competitors? Why did you come up with that solution? Who did you work with? Did you hire somebody on freelancer.com to build your design?
Thanks for listening to the Product Podcast.
How did you launch it?
If you like this episode,
who did you launch it to?
Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.
If you are able to document
all this journey,
I think it'll help you talk about it.
Visit productschool.com.
I guess authoritative.
Stay tuned for the next episode to learn more about the
secrets. But I would say the side gig is one idea, but there could be more. I'm sure, you know, people have more ideas. Okay. All right. I'm here for questions, but thank you so much for joining, guys. Okay.